Hello and welcome back to the EFL Freezer Crowd podcast. After a week off due to a lot of COVID and weather postponements, I'm once again joined by Andy.
Afternoon, gents.
Hi, mate. And Luke.
Right, guys, how are we?
Yeah, not too bad. Feeling fresh after a week off. In a week where Wayne Rooney is made permanent manager of Derby County, Rochdale are playing basketball, and Nick Powell strikes a knockout blow. Welcome back to the pod.
Well, I've just staggered up the stairs after an half-time siding, and we're fucking losing again!
After COVID postponements and a weather postponement for Coventry and Carlisle this week, it was time for us to watch Millwall build on that wonderful point at Bournemouth in midweek. This week we're up against Forest, Andy. A great watch.
Yeah, well, obviously we didn't... We didn't talk about that Bournemouth game on the podcast, so good performance there. As you said, let's build on it. Let's go to Forest, where we famously won 3-0 last season, the last game
famously
where fans were allowed in the grounds.
So famous, I remember that.
And Matt Smith hat-trick, come on, we all remember it. So you think, oh, Matt Smith, he'll start again, he knows what he can do there, bench. We'll play the same team that's won one out of the last 14 games. We'll have Ken Zahor up front on his own, isolated just as much as Jim Daddy or Bradders. Troy Parrott playing wing, 18 years old. One of the worst loan signings ever made. When you're expecting big things from someone. And that was the best of it, really. Yeah, so it's a really difficult one. I mean, Rowett's under a bit of pressure now. We've lost 3-1. I mean, I know that, James, you did watch a bit of it and then ended up turning it off.
Yeah, I decided to tune into it because obviously the other two games that we're going to be keeping an eye on were postponed. You just looked devoid of any ideas, which I think, and I'm going to use a word which perhaps sums up your whole season, but anticlimactic. After the great point against Bournemouth, you sort of thought maybe a little bit of fight again. And obviously the last time that I really watched you was against Coventry. And I think I saw on the podcast following that I was a bit surprised at the lack of fight. And I just don't know. I think, like you say, the big problem is your key players look so isolated.
I mean, basically there's two formations we play, either five at the back or a 4-3-2-1 type thing. But, I mean, for five at the back away from home, you need ball-playing centre-halves if you're going to do that. Someone who can start an attack. You've got Jake Cooper, Man Mountain, Hutchinson can't pick out a player 2 feet away.
Good goal scorer.
And Alex Pearce, who just looks past it at this level. I mean, we love the guy, but if you're not trusted to play a centre-half and we're playing four at the back, surely that says something that you're not good enough to play at all. Why has he just been chucked in when there's five at the back? I mean, and Forest, I'm surprised more teams haven't done this because you just pressure those three and we're in trouble straight away because we can't play it out. And Forest did that really well. Grabbin dropped deep, which was something that we weren't doing at all. He got involved in the play and it was just coming, really. Just Forest were okay, nothing special. I don't know what anyone else thinks about their goalkeeper, but he's always highly rated, Samba. But every time we play against them, he's absolutely terrible. We hardly tested him again.
Yeah, he is so dodgy. I think the same thing. I mean, I know I think he dropped a bit of a clanger against you last time. I seem to remember in that famous victory you were talking about earlier. But yeah, he does seem dodgy. Like you say, he comes with a bit of a reputation. I don't know. Yeah, I'm not sure either. I'm not convinced.
It's not a good time to play Forest because they're unbeaten in seven, but after what Andy said, you know, was a good result away at Bournemouth, they didn't build on that at all. And I think it was your brother, Andy, who said, you know, he's a regular on the Acton Millwall podcast. He said, all the good work and optimism following Bournemouth on Tuesday undone. Need to try something new and strengthen the squad, but who'd want to sign for this shower of
or language there. That's why we don't have him on this show. But the sentiment is correct.
One of the key takeaways, and it's something that you actually mentioned yourself, is that Forest weren't even that good. I don't think they would have beaten a lot of other teams playing like that. I think, like you say, maybe they did a few things better than you. They pressed the centre halves, but they also it just didn't seem as isolated. I don't know. It's just, I don't know. Like, I think your brother did make a good point there. How do you persuade someone to join when you're on a poor run? And the manager doesn't look too keen on trying anything new. I asked you maybe 2 weeks ago a question. I'm going to ask you again. Rowett, stay or go?
I think it's a similar situation. I mean, it's just not much point, is there, this season? We'll wait until the end of the year. I mean, we'll see what happens in for the rest of the transfer window, because strong rumours that Sam Allardyce wants Zahor back at West Brom, which would be a disaster.
You can imagine that as well.
Yeah, I mean, they've just won 3-2 at Wolves. Sort of Allardyce. You know, they don't need him. He's not going to play. Why take him?
Please, Mr. Allardyce.
Please. Well, God knows how much we're paying him a week anyway.
You're going to need something different to make the most out of Zahor if he does stay. What do you actually think you need to do in the window to make yourselves better than you currently are? Because I know we spoke about the starting lineup before the game on Saturday, the three of us. And I think it was Luke who said that on paper, that lineup actually looks quite strong. And I think this time last year, if that was your lineup, you probably would have said it does look quite strong. So what would you add to your squad to make it any better?
Well, yeah, I totally agree. I think part of the problem is, I've said it before, it seems to just, you have a front three there, Parrott, Zahor and Jed Wallace, who you'd say that is a strong front three. I don't know what our attacking intent, our tactics are at all. It's just they're up there and they're all so far away from each other and there's just nothing can come from it. So we're crying out for an attacking central midfielder. But does he trust someone to play in that position? Because that means another one's going to have to be further up the pitch and we're going to sacrifice defensively.
Feels a bit strange, like that front three on paper, again, looks really strong. It's almost like a hope, though. Like, you sort of put them there and hope that one of them is going to come up with something a little bit special, maybe a match-winning moment, which obviously Jed Wallace has done a few times. But when he doesn't, you just can't see where success and goals are going to come from. I think you put them three up there and individually say, yeah, great players, look good on the ball. But when it doesn't work and they're not connecting with the midfield enough and you don't really get at the defence as a three, which doesn't seem to happen much, it just falls short of goals, really.
Yeah, we rely on Jed to do so much and he has been poor this season. I mean, it's basically coming through him on that right-hand side and he's done absolutely nothing. And the thing is, he'll score every penalty we get. For some reason, we get a few from being bundled over in the box. And he might hit the odd free kick in. But I mean, he's hardly done anything. His stats really make him seem like a better player than he is. But we don't want to be too harsh on him. But it's just nothing's clicking at all. And the way it's going, one win in 15, you've got to say we've got to pull something out of the bag to stay up now, because it's just going from bad to worse.
Yeah, I wouldn't have expected us, Coventry and Millwall, to be sitting on the same points after 23 games played, to be fair.
We're still above Coventry, so mind the gap. Plus 4 goal difference on you.
Not that I'm counting. That plus 4 goal difference when we're 23rd and you're 22nd is going to be miserable.
Just to end the Millwall chat here, I mean, if there's one thing that you want to do in a match is when Sammy Amiobi gets on the ball, just let him cut in on his left foot. Just let him, every time. Let him do it, because nothing bad will happen if you just let that happen.
Just, you get a fantastic eye follow moment on that as well, where he picks the ball up in his own half and you can hear Rowett's gravelly voice screaming, pick him up, get back, pick him up. And you're thinking, oh yeah, well, they'll fall into shape here. Who the heck? We just let him stroll on into the half, play a 1-2 and then fire one into the corner. If you're Bart in goal, you must be pulling your hair out. It's just like watching all that unfold in front of you. Jesus wept, here we go again.
Anyway, that's enough of depressing Millwall chat. Probably a better week for you two without having a game. Luke, you're still sitting pretty.
Yeah, Carlisle is still top of League Two. Played one game since Boxing Day, but everyone around us is just dropping points. So just still sat up there. Signing of Reece Bennett could be huge. That Bennett-Hayden partnership that we love on this podcast. They've managed to secure him, so could be big news. I found out he had a Twitch account where he plays Football Manager. So I went and asked... Yeah. I went and asked him if he was looking forward to winning League Two, and he laughed and played it off like, oh, yeah. We're doing quite well, aren't we? Just like sneaking up the table, and he's still convinced that they're underdogs.
Luke, so. Was that subtly our first ever player interview on the, from the podcast? You've asked Reece Bennett a question on his live stream on Twitch, and he's answered.
Why is this the first that we've heard of it?
I don't know.
Didn't you should have like... kept asking him. Done a proper interview on make a few different accounts.
On this week's podcast, we interview.
Oh, dear.
That is good. I think you are likely to play it down in his position, though, aren't you? He's hardly going to sit there and go, oh, yeah, we're going to storm it this year. Lump on, boys. We're winning the league. But... No, I think it's important that they've kept hold of him. And I actually don't think that it's necessarily a bad thing that they've missed a couple of games or more than a couple of games now. Gives chance to get kind of a rest in there. But also, you don't want to be one of the teams who's played loads and loads of games and yet still hasn't pulled away from the pack. Because if you've played all the games and everyone's got games in hand on you, you're sitting there a little bit worried, I suppose. So no, that is funny that you've done that. And I'm not sure why that was the first that we've heard of it.
From some positive Carlisle transfer news to some somewhat worrying transfer news for Coventry. There's been some speculation about Hamer.
Yeah, we still haven't got rid of Bakayoko. That is worrying. Sorry, obviously you were referring to the interest in Hamer. There's been a bit of to and fro in about this. There was some... Yeah, worrying news that Rangers were interested in him. Then that news quickly changed to them suggesting that they weren't going to do it in January, but they were interested in signing him for the end of the season, which is better. Not great, but better. Then just yesterday, there was some news that actually it was a load of old rubbish, that there was no interest in him at all from Rangers. So I prefer that news myself. I can't see him staying much longer than this season anyway. He's just way too good for the team, if I'm being brutally honest. And he would still have quite a long time left on his contract at the end of the season. So probably be one of our biggest assets and would probably bring in quite a bit of money. Obviously, I don't want to see him go. Wouldn't mind actually getting to see him in the flesh. I'm not sure I'm going to get to. But if we want to stay up this season, we can't afford to be letting people like him go in January. Did make a good little addition, though, in Matty James, who weirdly was at Barnsley on loan and then was recalled and sent straight to Coventry. I'm sure he was chuffed about that. I think that's definitely added some depth into our midfield with Kelly out for so long. And then we've just brought in a striker from Brighton, whose name I'm not even going to try and pronounce for now. But I'm hoping that he'll bring in some goals with, obviously, Godden and Walker out for quite a long time now. Godden's injury is quite worrying. Apparently, it could actually be out for the season if it continues. It's some sort of like weird tumour on his foot. Let's hope that improves for him.
Well, I mean, that Brighton striker, I mean, I saw Swansea fans weren't particularly complimentary about his stint there. So, and looking at his career stats, whether he's going to get you many goals at this level, I'm not sure. But hopefully that comes back to bite me.
I'm not confident either yet, but I'll give him a chance. I think the it's harsh, the Swansea one. I mean, starts on Tuesday night, doesn't score, get him off, send him back.
Poor man's Bakayoko.
Well, it certainly feels like a long time and quite a lot has happened since those positive days for David Marshall. Derby in a bit of a mess, but obviously this week announced that Wayne Rooney's been made the permanent manager. How do we see that going, boys?
Well, he's got a tough job with the players not being paid for a while and trying to sell the youngsters to Premier League teams to try and fund it. just seems like such a tough job at the moment. Is it a win-win or a lose-lose situation for Rooney? If he keeps
I think that is an interesting one. It could actually turn out to be a bit of a win-win, because if it is as bad a mess as it seems it is, you know, people not getting paid and having to sell players, then inevitably relegation's looming. And if he does go down, I guess people can't say that it's all his fault and that maybe they're expected to go down anyway. But if he does pull it off and they do stay up, then it looks great. And your job is you've already managed to kind of avoid an inevitable relegation. So it could be a win-win. Equally, you go down and where the hell does your career go from there in management?
Yeah, well, he's definitely started fairly well, hasn't he? He sorted out the defence. Obviously, he needs to sort out scoring down the other end now. But I mean, you know, he's been there permanently for one game and he's already breaking records. That was Rotherham's first win at Derby since 1965.
Breaking records again.
And looking at the game, I think they've probably deserved it as well. So,
oh yeah,
a lot of work to go.
Yeah, they've hit the post from a good free kick. They've had a few goal-mouth scrambles. Rotherham trying to squeeze the ball into the net. Eventually, one of those scrambles did end up in the net. I think it's funny, like you say, he looks like he's tightened up the defence, and obviously the goals need to start happening for them now. If there's any area of the pitch you feel like he might be able to have an impact, then you'd like to think it'd be in an attacking sense. So hopefully he can turn that around for them. And I say hopefully, I'd obviously rather they go down than we do. But it is going to be interesting following Derby for a little bit now, just to see what happens now that he's been made permanent manager.
Yeah, he's got them making a few tackles early on as well. I think Christian Bielik, we had a chat about this earlier, how he wasn't sent off in that game, I don't know. First one, he's jumped.
Yeah, farcical.
Jumped so high in the air with his foot above his own head. Almost kicked someone's head off, just a yellow. And then he's just the most cynical, most yellow card of all yellow card tackles ever. Just a warning. I think Rooney might have been giving the ref the eyes on the bench there. He's learned well already.
Yeah, the Rooney effect. I just don't understand how the second one's not a yellow card. Absolutely. It's just cynical just to stop a breakaway. But we've chatted quite a lot on this pod about our thoughts on current EFL officiating, and there it goes again. Talking of teams who've tightened things up at the back, what a season Swansea are having defensively. They've now got the second best defensive record after 24 games in Championship history, which is pretty impressive, and they don't seem to be struggling to score too many goals going forward either. What a run they're on.
Yeah, I think that was it the year Reading had that incredible season when they got promoted.
Yeah, it was.
Best record. So yeah, if they can do anything like that this season, they've obviously got Jamal Lowe firing at the right end of the pitch.
Yeah, 7 in 7.
Yeah. Really clicked into place for him.
Yeah, he seems to have fit in really well there. I mean, he had the choice of picking between Millwall and Swansea. Both had bids accepted. And by God. What a pick. Really tough choice.
Contrasting seasons. Another player who's made a interesting choice in terms of transfers is Bright Samuel at QPR. Did you boys see that he's taken a move at the end of the season to Fenerbahce?
Turkish delight.
Could just be a massive Ozil fan and wants to play with him, but it just seems so weird. Who moves from like lower league English football to Turkey like that?
Bright Samuel.
Oh, there we go. Question answered.
It is an interesting move. You sort of feel like there must have been some interest in him in England. I don't. Obviously, we don't know the ins and outs of how it's happened, but it is an interesting one that's come through and been announced so early. Because what do you do now if you're the manager? Do you play him or do you make a point and not play him? It's made it difficult for his team as well as the manager, because you sort of. They also aren't a million miles away from being dragged into that relegation scrap, even though they did get a good win recently. That's probably the last thing that they need as a squad.
Yeah, I feel like he's the player that could feed Charlie Austin, and now he's saying he's off, and he's given the manager obviously problems for like selections. They look like they could be all right with Charlie Austin coming in, but now it looks like they could be dragged back into it.
Let's hope so, eh, Andy?
Oh, yeah. I'll fly him there myself. Yeah, so he's gone from, you know, he saw Charlie Austin come into the club and thought I could link up with him, or then he's seen the strong rumours that Mesut Ozil's going to be off to the same club. at Fenerbahce. So it's not a difficult choice in my opinion. But
yeah.
And another team had a great result away from home was Luton Town, playing against 10 men for a while at Bournemouth, but they've got a 1-0 win. I mean, I've mentioned this sort of manager quote on the podcast a few times, but I mean, it's just a classic of the genre from Nathan Jones after the game. He starts off the interview, the very first words, "We're in the bottom two budgets in the league, but we don't like harping on about it." And then goes on to and then goes on to say the rest of the interview. Well, why mention it, Nathan? If you don't like harping on about it, I think you do.
must be about the fourth manager now who's claimed to be in the bottom two budgets of the league. So who really is in the bottom two budgets of the league?
Just everyone knows Wickham is bottom, so they have to say bottom two.
Walk out of the interview going, "Go on, check it then. Call my bluff." And you know I'm not a bottom two.
Mark Squeaky Robbins has used it a few times as well, to be fair. But
yeah, every week, I think.
If only Gary Rowett could use it.
Sitting there paying the wages of Ken Zahor and Troy Parrott, and then can't use that one. Talking to managers, interesting watching the progression of, or lack of progression, of Wednesday. Sheffield Wednesday being able to bring a manager in. There's been a few rumours that some managers have taken interviews there and then got to the end of the interview and decided not to take the job due to, obviously, what seems like a rather controversial figure there, owner, old Chan Siri. It's going to be interesting to see how they get on, because actually they've picked up a little bit since getting rid of Pulis, which was strange. But you can't see it carrying on if they don't get a manager in.
Yeah, so the current favourite for the job is Vladimir Ivic, who was obviously recently sacked by Watford. He's got the English bug, thinks he can take that job. But if you go from the Watford job, they like sacking a manager every other week, to that mess at Sheffield Wednesday. I know a player can't play for more than three teams in the same year, but can a manager?
So it'd be interesting just to see if they get any success in trying to escape the drop again. Let's hope they don't, Andy. The more the merrier in this dog scrap.
Come on down.
And a funny one that I saw actually linked to Sheffield Wednesday was Craig Gardner. He left his coaching role at Birmingham in November to take up a coaching role at Sheffield Wednesday. And in January, he's actually left that coaching role at Sheffield Wednesday to take up a coaching role back at Birmingham. So didn't work out too well.
Crawling back. Saw the bright lights of Hillsborough there and ahead of himself.
And finally, in the championship, something to point our listeners towards watching is I don't know if either of you caught this, but the Nick Powell boxing celebration. Probably shouldn't be laughing at it, but McLean obviously banned and for going to a boxing gym and breaking the COVID rules. And then Nick Powell scores for Stoke and does a boxing celebration. That's one way to deal with the problem.
Yeah, it was pretty similar. If you remember when Wayne Rooney did that celebration after Phil Bardsley knocked him out in a play fight. So maybe it was a slight homage to Wayne getting a job in the league as well. Who knows?
That's what he'll say anyway. Yeah. Down into League One, obviously loads and loads of games being hit at the moment by COVID and obviously some weather cancellations as well. But there's a couple of interesting things that I've seen over the weekend. One that stood out to me was the omission of Richard Keogh from the MK Dons lineup at the weekend. He has been pretty solid for them since signing in quite controversial fashion, obviously being let go from Derby, sacked from Derby after the incident last year. But there's rumours that he's actually going to be leaving, which is quite interesting, for a championship side. Don't know if either of you caught that.
Yeah, I saw a rumour that he was going to go back to Derby. You know, 6 months after being sacked by them. That chaos.
Yeah, absolutely hilarious. Of all their problems going on at the moment, if they bring him back, the fans will go mental. And I, for one, am here to see it. Bring it on.
It would be a, we've mentioned Rooney a lot, but what a strange first transfer that would be. 34-year-old Richard Keogh.
Get him back in the squad and give him the armband.
But he has also been heavily linked with Huddersfield, so for Derby fans' sake, we'll hope that he he goes further north. But yeah, as you mentioned at the top of the show as well, Rochdale playing a bit of basketball at the moment, aren't they? I think the anti-Mourinho style, you attack, we attack. Luke did mention a couple of weeks ago that he thought Rochdale might have had something like this happening to them. By God, he was right.
Even Luke didn't anticipate that.
They've had three games since we talked about them on that podcast. Three games, they've been 20 goals and 2 red cards. It's just been chaos. Like 10 in attack, none at the back sort of football. Thoroughly entertaining, but it must be so stressful for their fans.
Yeah, I think last 6 results, 1-4, 5-0, 1-4, 3-3, 4-4, 3-3. It's like when you're getting bored of 3 alls, something's gone wrong.
The but club that are just trying to make sure their fans get their most out of their £10 each week.
Yeah, maybe that is it. But yeah, they're definitely the ones to. Maybe I'll watch them next week, actually. Instead, a bit of entertainment.
Everyone get a 0-0 down on your bet slip for Rochdale next week because Andy is tuning in. Another League One team who, unfortunately for them and their fans, aren't playing quite such attractive football is Paul Lambert's Ipswich. It's getting a little bit soured for them now. I think even the supporters groups are actually calling for the resignation of Paul Lambert now, and it's starting to turn a little bit sour. Not looking great for them at the moment, and they just about scraped past table proper uppers Burton at the weekend with a 1-0 win.
Yeah, I did see one thing on social media where apparently, not sure how many people were in the poll, but 93% of Ipswich fans said they wanted Lambert gone.
93, which is, Jesus.
And the 7% is him and his family.
I follow one Ipswich fan on Twitter who just put out, Ipswich fans, describe that game in 3 words. And everyone's just putting Paul Lambert out, Paul Lambert out. One guy just puts, I love beer. So someone's clearly telling you to drink to try and get through the Ipswich games at the moment. I think they might have had like one shot on target against the bottom of the league. I think they've just had enough.
Yeah, they shouldn't be down there really, should they? But they're just another one of those clubs who are in that cycle of an absolute mess. I think we've seen quite a few do it now and some are starting to get out of it. Some look like they might get out of it this year if you're looking at people like Pompey, who hopefully their rise will continue. But yeah, it's getting a bit toxic at Ipswich, and if it doesn't change quickly, then I think they will have to get rid of Lambert.
And like it or not, Charlie Wyke's got a hat trick for Sunderland.
It's one of the ups in the many ups and downs that is the Sunderland till I die.
That's an episode name, that, isn't it? Yeah.
Obviously appointed Lee Johnson manager not too long ago, and maybe he's starting to turn their fortunes a little bit. I did see in the league table they've got a couple of games in hand, I think, or at least one game in hand on some of those in the playoff spaces. So they'll be looking to try and make the most of that in the coming weeks. But yeah, some of the football actually looked quite good. Their third goal was a really nice breakaway, and then a cracking little finish from Wyke to round off the hat trick, which was good. I was tempted to put that forward as my goal of the week nomination, but Sunderland.
Luke's quiz. Edit that in.
Well, we did have a quiz this week. Believe it or not, we had a question that we went on to answer, and we had quite a few good answers. But unfortunately, the quizmaster managed to single-handedly destroy the quiz this week with some false answers, and then gave away a few too many answers at the end whilst we were arguing over what was true and false. So though, we'll leave the quiz this week, I think, and we'll come back stronger for it next week. I say we. Luke, you come back stronger for it next week, please.
Oh, dear.
It's not easy passing the ball back to the goalkeeper every single time you get it for 90 minutes.
Shouldn't be, should it?
Especially not with Ryan Schofield and the Huddersfield goal daydreaming, which has gifted a goal to Tom Cleverley. Thank you very much. God knows what he is doing. But it's passed back to him. He just does not pay any attention to it. And Tom Cleverley runs about 20 yards and just punts it into the Huddersfield net. Well, that's my goal of the week anyway. Don't know about yours.
Yeah, but the thing was, I mean, it wasn't your usual pass it back, nip in front of the keeper, put it past him. He's had to actually lunge in to get there before the goalie. If he just stood his ground and gone down screaming, there's no way that's getting given. But it's a shame because Schofield made a few great saves in that game before that. And then one little mistake, you're punished.
Yeah, Carlos Corberan.
One giant mistake.
Yeah, Carlos Corberan, the Huddersfield manager, said, oh, there's no doubt that Ryan Schofield's been involved in the first goal there. No, he wasn't involved. He was daydreaming. That's why it's gone in. Deary me.
You've bought the Tom Cleverley goal, have you, Andy? What have you bought this week?
I wouldn't say I brought it. I'd just say it was thrust upon me by Sammy Amiobi. And I think I did just as much sat at home to stop it happening as the Millwall defenders did. But I think I said it before, it was like men against boys, that attack. I mean, he looks like a giant most of the time, Amiobi. He's just strolled from his own half into the Millwall half. Little clever 1-2. He's got all day. And he just whips one in from outside the box that Bart couldn't stop. And I think that's, unfortunately, my goal of the week.
I won't pile much more misery on, but it was a good finish. Defensive work, absolutely woeful.
Non-existent.
Okay, James, what's your goal of the week?
My goal of the week was actually a very similar finish to the Amiobi one. It was Kyle Dempsey for Gillingham.
Like it.
A nice little bit of play down the left-hand side and a clever little pass inside and then a little layoff back out of the box to Dempsey, and he's just bent one into the far post, similarly to Amiobi, actually. So to be honest, Andy, if you want to vote for a goal that looks like that but isn't against your team, there's your option.
You've sold it to me there. But then I also did enjoy Tom Cleverley's goal.
You're not going to let him win.
My first goal of the week, surely.
They call me Shirley.
And that sold it to me. Congratulations, Kyle Dempsey. Goal of the week.
Get in.
This is just ridiculous.
On the topic of ridiculous, it brings us on to the final section of the podcast, our little high risk, high reward predictions for the next set of games. What are we predicting then, boys?
Well, in the spirit of the show, I'm going high risk for the high reward. And seeing that dog run on the pitch in Bolivia has made me worried that it's going to happen and I won't have voted for it. Less people in the stadiums means more room for dogs in stadiums. So I'm going dog on the pitch.
Who's bringing the dog in?
That's why it's high risk, high reward. It's got to find its own way.
Do you have a certain ground you think it may happen at, Luke? Or?
Well, whichever one's closest to me. I've got a dog. We can go on a trip.
Now, we've talked about this today, about Rochdale enjoying a lot of goals. But one thing that they haven't managed to do yet is have 10 goals in one game.
Oh, no.
They've had 8. They're away at Doncaster.
Ooh, potential then, yeah.
You'd hope so. They can be in any combination you like. Obviously, we prefer a 5-all. 10-goal thriller.
10-goal thriller at Rochdale. Right, James, what are you bringing to high risk, high reward?
Coventry have loaned Hilsner to Harry Kewell's Oldham Athletic. They're playing against a team who are doing fairly well this season, Newport, next week. And there's been quite a bit of stick aimed at Hilsner on social media from Coventry fans, saying that it was a bit of a shocking signing considering we've brought him in and then he's not been fit enough to play any games. And then not actually believing that he played that well for Oldham this weekend, and a bit of to and froing going on Twitter between fans. I'm going to go for Hilsner to really stick it to the fans and get a hat trick next week for Oldham against Newport County. So that is my prediction for next week.
Can you remind us which position this guy plays in?
Yeah, well, he's not a striker. He can play either out wide or in the number 10. But well,
so you've heard.
Well, Harry Kewell played him in the number 10 on Saturday for the full 83 minutes. So I'm assuming he'll do the same again. So hat-trick from number 10 can happen. Watch it happen. Well, boys, I guess all that really leaves me to do is wrap the podcast episode up and say I'll see you next week. Just want to do a quick reminder to our listeners that keep your eyes on our Twitter page. It's at Threes a Crowd Pod. We've been doing some little giveaways and things like that, and maybe some exciting news coming up for future episodes. So keep your eyes on that. And boys, I'll see you next week.
Yeah. See you next Monday.
Jesus, that was the worst feedback I heard since I handed in my dissertation. 1 stat every time Bristol City have scored first this season, they've gone on to win. Then brackets, can't have scored first very often then. But we'll leave that.
That is
we'll
funny.
Leave that one.
I'm glad you've shared it.
Doing a lot better than
doing all of our clubs.